matter what people say, we got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats, to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP. And today I have the, what's the word? What can I say? Is it honor? Is it distinct pleasure? One of those words. I am happy to be with the amazing Jean Pierre-Louis from Crapper Care. Jean, please say hello.
Hello, everybody.
So, Jean, as you know, January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. And so we wanted to take this opportunity to raise awareness about, you know, cervical cancer, one, but also talk to you about the amazing work that CapraCare is doing within this realm of cervical cancer. So I know you've been on this platform before, but it's been a little while. So could you please just tell the people a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm Jean-Pierre-Louis. Some folks know me as JPL. I am the founder, president, and CEO of CapraCare. CapraCare is an international global health organization that's been doing work in Haiti for 15 years now. February actually makes us 15 years old, of promoting access to healthcare in rural areas in southern Haiti. We have become one of the most reputable non-for-profit Haitian founded and led organization doing work in southern Haiti.
All right. All right. And so I want to kind of go into today's topic, which is cervical cancer awareness. Why is cervical cancer something that is so important to CapraCare?
Because it is one of the easiest cancers to treat. And to see that women don't have access to such basic screening is really heartbreaking, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So annually, you have nearly 2,000 women dying of this easily treatable cancer that you are able to screen and treat, you know, at a any medical clinic,
if you
have the resources there to do so. But what we found out is that majority, if not all, I don't want to say all, right, but we found that there's so many medical clinics that were not offering, even hospitals were not offering this basic service to women.
Right. And now, do you think it's about resources?
Definitely. Resource has to play a role, right? Not only for the facility, but for the women's as well. You have a country where people are figuring out what do they take care first or make priority. Is it healthcare, or is it putting meals on the table, or is it sending their kids to school?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So $25 screen a woman for cervical cancer, but $25 is a lot for women who also figure out, you know, do I put meal on my table for the next 3 days with that?
Right, right. Yeah, that sounds like very big challenges, right? I know sometimes when people think about you know, overseas and the issues that, like, especially the healthcare challenges that affect people overseas, I think here in America, we don't really have like the real picture of, like, you know, what it takes to actually conduct what you consider to be a very routine, very simple, very easy screening. Right. And oftentimes we're just like, well, why can't we just send some kits down there and just, you know, get the hospitals up and running? I think we have a lot of, like, lofty goals when it comes to, you know, overseas, an international, I guess, you know, assistance. But I think your explanation made it really real. Like $25, you know, for us, it's like, oh, it's nothing. But $25, if that's how much the screening costs, okay, great. Very reasonable for us here. But like you said, that can, you know, $25 can be the difference of sending your children to school or eating for survival. And so I can understand how something like cervical cancer, which, again, you mentioned is easily treatable, could become something, you know, to the point where it causes fatality, right? Because there's not enough resources, but it sounds like even if there were resources in terms of money, the allocation of the resources, they have to play this game of, you know, what's more important, food or this thing that might I might potentially have, but I don't know if I have it and I don't even know what it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because that's what it is. It is the leading cause of cancer-related death for women in all of Haiti. Mm. Yet it is the easiest to treat, right?
Right.
But some women will say, I don't want to know. Mm. Because they're afraid if they are diagnosed with having cervical cancer, then what's next now? Right? And that what's next means that it could be, depending on what level, right? Because if you find the earliest level, we are able to treat it right then, right in and there at a Capital Case Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a higher level, it might mean, you know, surgery.
Right.
All of that means one thing in the person's head, money.
Right.
That they don't have, you know, that's going to put them in burden to try to figure out how to do all of that. So sometimes they just do not want to know. But for a lot of women, they've never been screened. A lot of women do not even know what cervical cancer is or what part of the body that is that you found that in.
Right. So with respect to the screening process, could you talk to us a little bit about how that actually, like how that happens, right? I know that you said that there are Capricare clinics, but, you know, how are you getting the, you know, or what is involved in the screening, first of all, right? What's involved in the screening? Who is providing the screening? Just so that we can get a picture of what that looks like.
Yeah, it's a swab test that involves vinegar, really, on the cervix. Our doctors and nurses are trained to do this, and they use a light, right? They use a light and spirulums to actually go through and see the cervix and visualize it. So the method is actually called see and treat. Mm-hmm. You can basically see precancerous cells on the cervix. And as you can see them, you can easily then treat them,
mm-hmm.
you know, to remove them of the cervix. Again, it depends on what level or stage that you find them in. But most of the time, if you do find anything early, you can easily remove it right then and there of the cervix.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these doctors and medical professionals, are they doctors from the community? Are they doctors that are coming from, you know, overseas to assist in the treatment and screening of cervical cancer?
All our staff are Haitians. All our staff are in Haiti. It's local. So all our nurses and doctors or Capricare staff who perform these procedures right there on site. The only time that we bring extra capacity from overseas is to come and train and then leave.
Okay.
Right? So they come and train and provide the support, and then after that, our staff pick it over. So we use this model called train the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not implement any services that we are not able to sustain by ourselves on our site. If it requires certain equipment for us to do these procedures, then we must have these equipment. If these equipment means that you come with the equipment, do the procedure, then you have to leave, then we don't engage in that. Because it's heartbreaking that you come in, you bring a team in for a mission for a week, 2 weeks, or a month, and then the word starts to get around, people need the service, and then after they leave, people who will come following up and say, hey, I heard you guys do this, we come for that, and no, we don't have it available.
Right.
You know, right. Yeah, so we don't really engage in those. Like even when disasters relief happens, we do not do mission to bring people overseas to come provide support. We also train our locals to respond, to be first responders, to provide the healthcare, the mental health support, the relief work that has to be done. So we really are about providing services on the ground by the people themselves.
I like that. So I want to talk a little bit about the impact of the screenings, right? So I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, like 2,000 women plus, you know, are dying from this a year. So to date, do you have a sense of how many cervical screenings you've provided to, you know, to the respective areas that you guys service in Haiti?
Oh, absolutely. We almost have 15,000 screenings for cervical cancer. We have already nearly 200 women we have provided treatment for who actually had lesions.
Mm-hmm.
We have already reached about 40,000 outreach on an annual basis, that is. So we've only been doing this since 2017, but the outreach you know, every year we reach about 40,000 women in terms of like education, outreach to their community, group gathering, to explain to them, to empower them about cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the screening. On a regular basis or monthly, our goal is to screen 200 women monthly. But like I said, it does require resources. So it costs about $25 to screen one woman. So in a month, it costs Capital Care $5,000 to screen about 200 women monthly. And we do this not only at our medical site, but we also do mobile clinics as well. So we go to any community and mobilize the folks, and then we do the clinics to screen the women.
Okay. So it sounds like, if you said it takes about $5,000 to screen about 200 women, if you were to double that in terms of the funding, would that mean that you would have the capacity to screen 400 women?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Our goal is to screen 25,000 women annually.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires $250,000. $250,000 will screen 25,000 women a year.
Okay.
So Capital Care does have the capacity to easily screen 400 women a month. We would just need to be able to get to more areas mobile-wise and then up our staff to screen this. And we can, but it's a matter of having the resource. And there's a great need for it. Wherever we go to do these clinics, oftentimes we have to spend 2 to 3 days because of the large amount of people that has to come. And then as a result, we have to always put the cap at about 150 women for that day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So I know that outside of cervical screenings, you know, Capra Care is engaged in a lot of community work, right? And so I want you to talk a little bit about the other efforts that you guys undertake as Capra Care in terms of education and things like that within the communities.
Yeah, Capra Care actually has 5 core programs. Healthcare being one, prevention being the second one. We are big on school-based health education. We like the idea of not only teaching the students about prevention, but use the same curriculum that we use to teach the students to also modify that and teach their parents as well. So if they know about malaria, then their parents know about malaria. If they know about hygiene and clean water, then their parents know about hygiene and clean water. The next one is mental health. You have a country that is constantly going through so many, you know, issues, political disasters and natural disasters, unexpected whatever. So living condition is very hard for folks on the ground. So mental health makes a big component of what we do in terms of providing counseling, whether it's psychological first aid when disasters happen, or ongoing counseling for both students and their parents as well.
Okay.
The other big component which you mentioned is education. We have a program called Help End the Cycle, and that's basically saying that, you know, providing scholarship for students whose parents are not able to help pay for their school education. And often that leads to poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to end that cycle. So annually we try to sponsor at least 40 students with a scholarship to support them for the school year. And the last program that we have is training, professional development training.
Mm-hmm.
We train locals to become community health workers / first responders. So as a result, when we do have disasters and Capra Care in full mode of responding to for disaster relief, then we bring in the extra backup of those folks that we have trained over the years to become first responders for disaster relief.
Okay. So I guess touching back on the education piece with respect to cervical cancer, what are some of the ways that you engage the community? I mean, Southern Haiti, you know, it's pretty vast, and I know the area that you specifically work in, but I just want to kind of paint the picture as to how this word is really getting spread around. Especially earlier, we talked about how some people don't even know what cervical cancer is, and you know, we come from a community where there's a lot of like superstitions about things. There's a lot of don't eat this, don't eat that, because it can cause this, it can cause that. And so kind of breaking through, you know, those barriers, you know, with rumors and just, you know, just colloquialisms and just the culture in general, right? How do you go about sharing this information and raising this awareness to the point where people are like, you know what, I think I would like to be screened?
Yeah, so we partner with local churches. We partner with local leaders to break down the myth, right? And then we invite them in for the education. And then we do a full PowerPoint presentation and show them exactly what they will go through for the procedure. Mm-hmm. You know, why is it important? How this impacts their life? And what is cervical cancer?
Right.
So that's the three component to it. So before we even, when we do mobile clinic, before we even start, we send our staff there to outreach the community, right? So small gathering, door knocking, outreach at its basic form. And once we get them in or one-on-one, we explain. And now when we then register them for the screening, when they come in, they sit down with the nurse, register, and then go through a pre-counseling phase, right? Mm-hmm. Again, it's what you're going to go through. This is what to expect. So therefore, they go in at ease. And after they finish, then they meet again with the nurse. How was the experience? How did it go? So there's a post-counseling that goes as well. So we have a whole a method of, you know, making this very efficient and putting them at ease through the screening.
Okay. Yeah, because I can see, I mean, even here, right, there are certain things that, you know, people are just either not open to, like you said, they either have a block, they don't want to know, they don't want to have an idea. But when I think about our community, especially when you mentioned like myths and like rumors and things like that, when it comes to like identifying symptoms, a lot of times, you know, we chalk it up to it's gas. It's just, you know, just not, you know, it's the weather, it's cold outside. And so oftentimes, you know, we're experiencing these symptoms, but because of, you know, our beliefs or what we think, you know, or what we grew up thinking as to like, oh, if I have this little pain on the side, this is just gas, let me drink some tea. Sometimes that I find that could be a challenge to overcoming, you know, this desire to really share awareness, raise awareness, and really get people to like a place of wanting to address, you know, their healthcare needs. But it sounds like through the partnerships of the churches and local community centers and you know, officials, that's kind of how you're breaking down, you know, those barriers.
Absolutely. The culture, the Haitian culture, chucks everything to gas.
Yeah. Even me, like I mention it because I'm like, I was a culprit. I know better now. But I mean, there's been some serious health scares. And the weeks prior, I'm like, I'm just going to drink some peppermint tea, some timont, some, you know, asosi, and I'm going to be fine. And after a while, I'm like, but I'm not fine.
Yeah. So you have that, right? Everything is gas or somebody's doing you wrong, right?
Right. That is true. Doing
witchcraft on you. So doing the education, that's why it's so important to say, no, these are not gas. These are not witchcraft. These are real health issues. Sometimes it's the diet and it's the lifestyle.
Right.
You know, this does, you know, cervical cancer does involve sexuality, right? So that is, you know, sexual education has to be done. So we do all of that and then, you know, break down those barriers. So therefore they say, oh, wow, okay, let's do this. Right. So when so-and-so died, it wasn't because of somebody did them wrong or it was guys that, you know, that killed them. No, they have been this. And these are the symptoms to look for. And this is a silent killer in a way. So you don't get pain until it's really, really at this bad stage. Right. That you find out, oh, what's going on here? By the time that you really get those kind of symptoms, it can be too late.
Right, right. So, you know, when we think about screening here in the U.S., you know, I know they change the metrics often, but at one point you were going to get your screenings, your pap smears and things like that once a year. Now, depending on how your pap smears look, you're coming every, you know, maybe 3 years now for some people. But with that respect, there is an ongoing screening that's happening with us here who are going to, you know, who are taking our gynecological visit seriously, right? So, In Haiti, in this particular area where you guys are servicing, After the cervical, you know, screenings that are happening with, so let's say, you know, my name is Marie and I got a cervical screening, you know, this month. What is, I guess, the follow up in terms of, am I eligible to get another screening in the following year? Or like, what's the protocol for that? Because I think some people may think it's great to have the screening, but, you know, things tend to develop, you know, over time. So maybe today I might be cervical cancer free, yeah, but in 2 years I might. So I think it goes back to the capacity, just getting people to understand what is the capacity for routine screenings. Is that something that happens, or is that, are we not there yet?
Oh, we are. So the physician, based on once they evaluate the patients, you know, because lifestyle plays a major role in that,
mm-hmm,
right? And other chronic health issues play a role in that too. And one example of chronic health issues is HIV, for those who are HIV positive as well, right?
Mm.
And so someone who may have, you know, had multiple sexual partners, as someone who just had one sexual partner. So once they've done the evaluation, then they're able to know, okay, how soon do we do a follow-up with that person?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things, those are what goes into determining, okay, what's the follow-up, you know, would the follow-up be 6 months, would the follow-up be a year, would the follow-up be 5 years?
Okay. So you had mentioned earlier that this is in the southern part of Haiti, in rural areas for the most part, right? And so, you know, we have an idea here. Sometimes when we think about rural, where you're like, there's no technology, there's nothing out there, you know, how are records being kept? How are, you know, what is the mechanism to actually perform? Like, what obstacles may be in your way to conduct, you know, the screenings and the programs that you're doing to the level that you need them to, you know, to happen? So could you explain a little bit about when you talk about, you know, rural Haiti, these rural areas, what are we really talking about, and what obstacles, if any, you know, present themselves for, you know, operating something like this in these rural areas?
The big threes are access to clean water, access to electricity, and access to the internet. And those are big threes that we have over the years conquer.
Mm-hmm.
We have access to all of those things on site. So that allows us to be able to track. Access to the internet allows us to be able to track,
mm-hmm,
synchronize our information, you know, to our system with our Haiti staff as well as the U.S. staff. So we do that, so we keep very good records on, you know, good records. And of course, if you don't have electricity, then you can't run power for certain things. So we are energy independent. We have solar panels that we use, so we are never out of power. We actually also have backup generator if we needed to have additional. So those are good. And of course, having access to water on site. So we have those things. So as for us, you know, we are, you know, they may, for us here in the U.S., these are basic things, but for operation in rural Haiti, these are huge, major things.
Mm-hmm.
These are huge, right? It requires a lot of resources to be able to have those things. It's costly to have those things. And then I would say an additional four is having a physical facility, a space to be able to do this. So we have the space to do that. Speaking of space, we are actually in the process of moving from where we at now to building a state-of-the-art facility that does involve, that does have all of those things, all of those big threes, to be able to level up, amplify, scale up our services, not only for cervical cancer, but overall women's health, but a comprehensive access to healthcare to anyone in needs in Haiti.
I mean, that sounds amazing, because I think when we think about, again, the rural, whether it's rural Haiti, rural Jamaica, when we think about, you know, rural, the countryside, as some people like to call it, especially those of us here who may have never traveled to, you know, these areas, we only know what we see on TV or what we hear from our parents growing up. You know, there is this idea that, you know, like, you know, how do they have the internet? What, you know, where is, you talk electricity, does it, you know, is it, does it shut down after hours when the sun comes down? Like, what, you know? And then when we see these videos about people walking miles, you know, with a bucket just to get like water somewhere in some well. You know, sometimes we tend to not, we're not able to really visualize like how an operation like this, especially we're talking about healthcare, surgeries, like to keep it, you know, sanitary, to keep it sterile. We're having a hard time maybe understanding like how does all that happen? But I think what you highlighted many times is resources, resources, resources. And it sounds like if you, you know, and this is really for other people too, who may have ideas of starting something like this or similar in maybe their village or their, you know, their rural area, that might find like, you know, how do you overcome these challenges? It sounds like it's money.
Yeah. You know, money is one, but mindset is the first thing that you have to have. Mm-hmm. If you plan to do any work in developing countries, the mindset, right? Whoever the founder is, whoever wants to take the initiative, that person has a very strong mindset and must be very courageous. Mm-hmm. World Capital Care means an act of courage. So we lead with that motto. It's not that we don't have fear, it's that we need to overcome those things to make things happen. The next thing I would say is leadership. Have your people. People who actually understand what leadership is. People who can actually work together. Once you begin to have the right mindset, you have the right people, then you can begin to look for, okay, the resources in terms of money, mm-hmm. able to build whatever that your vision, your mission may be. And I would also say culture. People oftentimes overlook that, but you have to develop the right culture, meaning develop your people with the right mindset, the right vision to be able to embody whatever level of work that they will have to do. Those things play big. So oftentimes we think of money, 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 but you may have money, but you have the wrong culture, you have the wrong leadership, you have the wrong team, right? And then now you're just wasting people's hard-earned money.
Right. Which happens a lot, unfortunately. So one thing I wanted to also, I guess, touch on a bit is collaborations. I know we talked about collaborations with the churches and some of the locals and things like that. But, you know, when I'm thinking about resources and access was something that you had mentioned earlier. Does CapraCare rather collaborate with other organizations and with the government, right? Because again, you know, we're trying to like break down some myths too during this conversation when it comes to the Haitian government. We know that there's a lot of stuff happening over there. There's a, you know, or lack of government, however you want to paint it. CapraCare is still operating as of today functionally in Haiti. So I want you to talk about, you know, collaborations you may or may not have, I guess, in Haiti, but also what your collaboration is with the government in terms of, you know, doing what you're doing in Haiti, right? Because there has to be some kind of checks and balances. At least we, you know, that's what we're thinking there should be, but maybe give us some insight as to how that all works.
Yeah, relationship is very important, right? So we're very good at developing local relationship in Haiti. So we have local relationship with the local leaders. We have a relationship with the local mayor, or AKA also known as the Kazakh, right? That's the person who, you know, oversees a lot of community activities that are going on or support you. Of course, because we're in healthcare, we definitely have a relationship with the Ministry of Health in India as well. So all the major players that we need to have a relationship with, we have. Sometimes they are temporary, sometimes they're long-term, sometimes they are not on the books. Right? They're officially recognized.
Right.
You have to have those relationships as well. So oftentimes people overlook like, oh, this person's not in a position of power to be recognized as an official. But you know what? The community recognizes that person as an official. So you have to have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing for us is to be able to be transparent in our work, explain to people. We don't hide things from the community. We let them know exactly what it is. And I'm from that community. So when I come in, I'm like, listen, this is how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to what you may think or what you may hear, this is how it's done. And it starts with really you.
Mm-hmm.
Those changes that you want to see, it's not gonna be somebody who's gonna come in on their big horses and gonna save you and is gonna come here and pour a bucket of money and make things happen. It's gonna have to be you. It starts with you, and this is how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It requires patience. So I go through a whole, session with people, and I love doing it to kind of just see the light bulb goes on, because it means something to for each person. You can get that light bulb to turn on. It's potentially somebody else that they can actually talk to and get their life force to be.
Mm-hmm.
So relationships for us are very important. So we have relationships with all of those major players, that the unofficial and the official.
There is always an unofficial. An unofficial official, right? So I want to talk about success stories. So I know we mentioned earlier that, you know, there's about 200, women a month that are being screened, and you know, there's been success stories in a sense where we've been able to catch things early. People have gone through surgeries and things like that. But is there a particular success story that's memorable for you? I feel like in this work, there's always that one or that two that you're like, man, like this story, like I will never forget it because of how powerful or what, you know, there are certain aspects of it that are just so memorable. So is there anything like that? Do you have like a story like that that just stands out to you?
There are so many. For each core program, there are stories, right? But you find some stories are similar. But for women, their stories tend to be similar because they are often the one taking care of the entire household or family.
Mm-hmm.
They are the centerpiece. So we had, I think, one woman that we have in fourth grade who didn't know that she has cervical cancer. So when she came into Capra Care and got screened, and we found out that she had it, and it was at a little more advanced stage beyond our own capacity. So we were able to immediately connect her to advanced care, and she was able to have operations. So she had surgery to completely remove her cervix.
Mm.
Otherwise, she would have died of cervical cancer. Now, this is a woman that has four children and her husband. So you imagine, and they are young kids who are all in school. So imagine if that lady wasn't there anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, women runs the household, right? So if she's not there, you can imagine the chaos for not only the husband, but definitely for those four kids.
Right. And it's such, you know, when you mentioned that, you know, her whole cervix had to be removed, like, you know, it's the realization that you have the cervical cancer. And then two, it's that it's at an advanced stage. They can't just give you, you know, something light. And then the third is now your entire cervix is gone.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, so I know that you had mentioned that you also provide mental health. Service as well too. So I'm trying to see with the connection. So with an individual like that who has now undergone all this, you know, all of this, the surgery and this, just again, the news now, you know, now affecting her reproductive life for the rest of her life, because I'm not sure how young she was or if she planned on having more kids. At what point do you, you know, now connect the mental health aspect?
So this is the reason why we connected at the beginning. We do the pre-counseling, and then after we do the post-counseling. So someone like her, we connect her with our counselors on an ongoing basis. You know, because people react differently to these news,
right?
And it's almost like we use, you know, I'm in public health. I have my advanced degree, master's in public health, so I love the public health model. So I implement a lot of that into our Capra Care's work. So as much healthcare as we are, we're very much community-based in terms of prevention, education, empowering folks to be able to take care of their health. Mm-hmm. So when we do an HIV testing, it's the same model, right? Somebody come in to be tested for HIV. They don't know if they have it or not. They come in, not, you know, they may have come in because they had an experience and they got news or they hit somebody, whatever their experience may be. They're coming in at a stage where they're not so calm. So for a lot of these women who are having the courage to come get screened, it's the same thing. You don't know where their state of mind is. So the very first thing is take care of the mental health. Do the counseling. And then they go through the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or those folks who come in for HIV testing. You do the pre-counseling. Then they go to the test. Then the anxiety comes in. Having to wait to find out what's going on. Well, same thing with the women. After they're being screened, once they have that doctor, What happened? What did you see? Right? Then you have to sit down with them, with the doctor or the nurse, to do the counseling. This is where the post-counseling comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health play a role from the beginning to the end. And should it be something that's required more ongoing counseling, then we connect them. Good thing is, we have those resources at Capital Care to be able to do that.
Right. And I think that it highlights, you know, what you talked about earlier in terms of, you know, when you're doing this kind of work, having the mindset, you know, before just jumping into it. Because I think, you know, a lot of times we see organizations, groups, you know, well-meaning, but they might just rush in to do, you know, what they think they need to do, and then they rush out, and then the individual is kind of left behind feeling vulnerable, you know, uneasy, anxious, depressed. So I think that having that, I guess, that foresight in a sense to really marry the two, mental health and the screenings and whatever it is that, you know, the procedures, whatever that's going on, makes a lot of sense. And I think it serves as like a holistic, that holistic practice, right? When we're looking at what you guys are doing, it has a like, I can see the whole holistic picture from beginning to end. And I think that it's really inspirational for people who are looking to get into this work, because we're seeing that we are treating people like human beings, right? We're not just going in, in and out jobs. We're actually understanding that this is a human being. We're coming in to provide treatment, but we have to see the big picture. It can't just be the screening. It has to be what's their mindset before, what's after. So I don't think many people really take that into consideration when they're working in developing countries, especially. So I think that it just goes to show the compassionate side of care.
But that is very unfortunate, because the number one thing that all human beings living on this earth asks for, what? Respect.
Right.
Right. So we pride ourselves in providing every single person, child to adult, with respect. And for me, that is big, because I grew up in that community. I was a kid in that community. You know, I always wanted myself to be treated with respect when I was a kid.
Right.
So same thing when those kids walk into the clinic too, that you treat them with, you know, with respect and preserve their dignity. That right. is, you know, for Haitians, the word respect, people will fight with you over that. You know, that's you know, when they don't get that, that's a big deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't treat people just anyway. Plus, these are folks in the community. They work there. They live there. So we do a big. That's one of our core values, is making mm-hmm. sure that people do respect everyone that they come in contact with.
Okay. So what are your future plans for Capra Care? I mean, you guys have been around for so long. You're doing amazing things. But what else is in the books?
Well, lots of things. Like I said, we are raising $1 million to build a state-of-the-art health facility that will also feature an emergency center. So when disasters do happen, we are able to continue our services and not just stop them to respond to disasters, but able to continue our services while responding to disasters, while being able to provide shelter for those in need. Because oftentimes when, you know, the wind blows too hard, somebody's roof falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Somebody's whole house, you know, collapsed. So it doesn't take a lot. You don't have to have an earthquake for people to be out of housing, temporarily out of housing in Haiti. And mm-hmm. we live in a country where climate change is continually impacting us. Disasters are happening. Between the month of August to January, it's all potential hurricane season.
Mm-hmm.
Where things do happen. Another thing is, we are partnering with the likes of JetBlue and Adidas to actually have what is called a Half for Haiti Marathon, mm-hmm. which will be happening in December of 2024. The goal is to raise $250,000, $250,000 to screen 25,000 women for cervical cancer. So look out for those things. So those are things that we currently have in place. But every month, we have a goal every month to screen 200 women. That's why I said, you know, $25 screening one woman. So you can imagine if 200 people actually provide $25, mm-hmm. then we can screen 200 women every month. So anyone who's considering being a change maker, being a person who could make a difference to somebody else, whether you know them or you don't not know them, oftentimes we do not know those that we help, consider making a donation to Capital Care to support screening for women. Consider making a $25 donation that will screen one woman. And if you want to do more, two is 50, $100 will screen four women. And you could easily do that on a monthly basis. Hopefully you are able to do that easily on a monthly basis. And that's going to go a long way. Huge impact on women.
Well, I guess segueing to my next question then, where can we make these donations? How can people get involved? Because some people, you know, they go above and beyond, right? They're not just about writing the check. They want to also know, wow, this is something that I am passionate about too. They may be passionate about women's health. They may be passionate about just people, developing countries. You know, people have so many different passions. And so somebody might be listening or watching, and they might be wondering, how do I get involved outside of my check? I am going to give the $100, but I want to know, how can I be, you know, boots on the ground with Capra Care? So where can they go? How can they find you?
I'll give people five ways to support that they can easily get involved. First of all, just go on our website, capocare.org, www.capocare.org. You got it right on the screen.
But you know, there are people who are going to be listening on the podcast that might not actually watch this. So you got to spell it out, Gene.
There you go. So capocare, capracare.org, right? Go to our website. You could easily make a donation there to support any of our core programs. So you could cancel if you'd like. You could Google Capital Care and you'll see our work. You'll see a history. We've been published for our work that we've been doing. And we are all over any of these platforms, social media, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, we are on there. So, you know, go on there. The other part is you can send us an email, info@capitalcare.org. But here are five ways we get involved. We are building a state-of-the-art health center right now. So if you would like to give a legacy gift or help with the designing or help with the planning execution, reach out to us, and we have a committee that is working on that. That's one. We're going to have the half marathon right here in Brooklyn Prospect Park in December. We are looking for folks who wants to volunteer, looking for folks who wants to run. So you can reach out to us and volunteer or participate. That's two. Then here's three. Next one. We have three committees, one for education, one for prevention and mental health, one for healthcare. If any of those domains sounds, you know, resonates with you, feel free to reach out to Capital Care. We can let you know how you can be involved in any of these committees. And we don't meet every month. We don't meet a bunch of time. We accommodate everyone's busy schedule within these committees that you may want to join to support hands-on work with Capital Care.
I love it. I love it. All right, Gene. I mean, I'm a big fan of Capra Care over the years. And they really do amazing work. And I really do hope that for those of you where this resonates, that you guys do reach out, you know, on the website. But you know, Gene, sometimes people are not really keen on the websites. Do you have any social media handles? Like, what DM can we slide into? Like, where could we slide into the DMs?
Any of them at Capra Care. Right? Twitter is at Capital Care. Instagram at Capital Care. You go on YouTube/ Capital Care. You go on LinkedIn, Capital Care. You go on Facebook, Capital Care. So it's one name, one handle for any of those platforms, and you find us there. And just drop a message in our DM, and we reach out to you.
All right. Well, Gene, thank you so much for being a guest on the According to RP platform. You know, you are always welcome here. And thank you for helping us in raising this awareness for cervical cancer. Although we talked about it more so in the realm of, you know, Haiti as a developing nation and, you know, how things are working with your organization, I think it is very important for us to highlight that here in the U.S. as well, too, that it is, you know, it's a cancer that is easily treated.
Yes.
If you are screening. So, you know, I know a lot of times we focus on men not going to the doctor and not doing what they need to do, but I think it's also, you know, important to highlight and just say that, you know, women as well, you know, make sure that you are going to see your gynecologist. You know, these You know, the ovarian cancers, the cervical cancers, these are things that can be detected if you do your routine visits. You know, if you're missing your visits, you know, it's, you know, unfortunately, I've known a few people who have passed away from cervical cancer because they caught it at, like you said, a late stage. Once it's caught and you're getting all the pains and everything like that at a late stage, oftentimes it's not, the prognosis is not good. And so we want to make sure that we encourage you all to, you know, do your yearly checkups, go to your doctors, you know, just do what you need to do and do get that preventative care moving so that, you know, you are not in that unfortunate position where, the cancer has spread or whatever it is that ends up happening. I think that it's important that we take it a little more seriously, especially with the gynecology appointments. I know that it's something that, you know, some I've heard people say they don't like to go, they feel uncomfortable going. And I think that especially in this day and age, the way the technology is nowadays, you know, for those who have not been, you know, it's not as uncomfortable as it used to be. I think that it's much more comfortable. Technology has really gone a long way. And so for those of you who have not gone to get your checkups because you're kind of traumatized or afraid of the process and the procedure, I can tell you that things have come a very long way. But it's a treatable cancer. And it's always a shame when you see that, you know, people are dying, especially in the Black community, at high numbers, at alarming rates, from very treatable, you know, diseases and, you know, and things like that. So January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. We don't just want to just talk about it in the month of January, but we do take this opportunity, since it's a global awareness, to raise awareness alongside of our brothers and sisters who are doing so. But again, Jean, thank you so much for coming in and giving us a little more, I guess, color as to this world of cervical cancer and how you are, you know, doing your part in really shifting the narrative and changing lives around the world. So thank you.
You got it. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of According to RP, and we will talk to you guys next time.